From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block. BP says it will soon begin a new effort to cap the gushing oil well in the Gulf of Mexico. But even if it's successful, the plan would not shut down the spill. Ultimately, the oil giant says the best chance of doing that lies with two relief wells that are now being drilled, but they likely won't be ready until August. As NPR's Carrie Kahn reports from Buras, Louisiana, the prospect of waiting another 2 to 3 months for a fix isn't sitting well with many along the Gulf Coast.
Plaquemines Parish police officers wearing light blue life jackets set out on patrol today. Memorial Day usually means lots of time on the water fishing, but down at the southernmost tip of Louisiana, these waters are closed to boaters. 25% of all federal waters in the Gulf of Mexico are now closed. And news that BP may not be able to completely stop the leak until August has locals here fuming. Keith Hinckley, a councilman in Plaquemines Parish, says it's unbearable to think about having to wait that long.
That leaves us in a bad, dire strait right here. It's scary. We don't know where it leads us. What are the problems going to be? It's beyond our belief.
BP's plan involves cutting the leaking riser pipe and placing a containment cap on top of it. Officials say if successful, some but not all of the oil could then be piped to the surface. But they warn that before the cap is placed on the severed pipe, the flow of oil will likely increase. And if that wasn't enough bad news, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration released its latest prediction of where the oil slick is headed. It said it may move north toward barrier islands off Mississippi and Alabama. Carrie Kahn, NPR News, Buras, Louisiana.
And for our last word in business, we'll stick with struggling graduates. In China, more than 6 million graduates hit the job market this year. College enrollment in China has surged, and the labor market can't keep up. Even after leaving campus, many graduates are forced to bunk together, sometimes 6 to a room, in crowded apartment buildings in areas known as ant colonies. Two young men living in one on the outskirts of Beijing composed an ode to their plight. It's called Song of the Ants. Although we have nothing, we are tough in spirit, they sing. The Wall Street Journal recorded the graduate balladeers and reports some local officials in charge of the neighborhood are trying to improve conditions. They're replacing old crumbling buildings with new low-rent apartments. Our two singers have now moved to a new, larger room, and they even have their own private toilet. That's the business news on Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
Memorial Day can be the unofficial kickoff to a great summer season of tasty new food. But you'll need something to wash it all down and the right tasty beverage to complement your healthy new recipes. And so, as we do when we're thirsty, we turn to Callie Crossley. She's a wine connoisseur and runs the blog, The Crushed Grape Report. Here's Callie with her summer sipping favorites. Grab a pen so you can jot down notes on how to mix some of her favorite drinks.
I wasn't born in the Peach State of Georgia, but my dad nicknamed me Peaches for reasons known only to him. Maybe that's why I have a particular fondness for peachy drinks during the summer. My favorite, the Bellini. It's a champagne-based drink created back in 1931 at Harry's Bar in Venice, Italy. Now, there are many versions of this drink, but I like to kick off the summer with the upscale version. But don't let the upscale factor intimidate you. It's actually easy to whip up. You'll need 2 or 3 white peaches. You can always use yellow if you care to simplify things. Slice up the peaches and puree them in a blender. Then find a champagne flute and fill the bottom of it with about 2 ounces of the peach puree. Next, pour chilled, dry champagne over the fruit. Use a long spoon to gently stir the puree up from the bottom of the glass. And finally garnish with a peach slice, or for contrast, grab a strawberry. Enjoy! Now, there is also an even quicker, but not so fancy, Bellini recipe. It's made without the actual peaches, but it's big on peach taste. This version is a natural for summer because it's icy cold, literally. And it's a simple recipe. You'll need 1 ounce of peach nectar. You can usually find it in the grocery store on the aisles with the juices. 1/2 teaspoon of fresh lemon juice. You'll also need 1/2 ounce of peach schnapps liqueur and 1/4 cup of crushed ice. Now put it all in a shaker and shake it up. Then pour it into a chilled glass and top it off with chilled, dry, sparkling wine. Simply wondrous, especially on a hot, humid day. This next drink is not a peach drink, but the D'Artagnan is another one of my favorite summer cocktails. And yes, it is named after the swashbuckling character in the movie and the book, The Three Musketeers. Here's how to make it. In a portable container, now you know, we Southerners like a glass jar with a screw top, mix 1 teaspoon of brandy, 1 teaspoon of Grand Marnier, and 3 teaspoons of fresh squeezed orange juice. Cut long strips of orange peel to use for garnish. Next, add 1/2 teaspoon of simple syrup, which is half sugar, half water combination boiled until it makes a clear syrup. Mix all ingredients. Then go grab a bag of ice, some bottled water, and a bucket to take with you on that summer picnic. Once you unpack your picnic basket and are all set to eat, do what I call a quick on-the-picnic blanket chill by dipping the glasses in and out of the icy water. When ready to imbibe, add chilled sparkling wine. Delish.
That was wine connoisseur and blogger Callie Crossley. You can find a link to her blog, The Crushed Grape Report, by going to our website. You can also find the drink recipes you just heard by logging on to NPR.org. Click on Programs and then on Tell Me More.
For many soldiers, sailors, and Marines deployed overseas, a family or a loved one waits at home for their return. Poet Jeanne Dubrow is one of those people waiting. Her husband, a career naval officer, is halfway through a 9-month tour of duty on a destroyer in the Western Indian Ocean, which is conducting anti-terrorism and anti-pirate operations. Dubrow's new collection of poems, Stateside, is written from the point of view of a military wife. The book has a foreword by Pulitzer Prize-winning poet Ted Kooser. We asked Dubrow to introduce and read 3 of her poems.
A number of the poems in Stateside take their titles from military terminology. The phrase secure for sea refers to the process of making sure that all unstable objects on a ship are safely tied down before deployment. But secure for sea is also what a family does before a sailor is deployed in preparation for the long absence. This poem is called Secure for Sea, Maritime Terminology. It means the movable stays tied. Lockers hold shut. The waves don't slide a metal box across the decks or scatter screws like jacks. The sea, like a rebellious child that wrecks all tools which aren't fastened tightly or fixed. At home, we say secure when what we mean is letting go of him. And even if we're sure he's coming back, it's hard to know, the farther out a vessel drifts, will contents stay in place or shift? My next poem talks about a time after my husband and I first married, when I found myself seeing danger where I hadn't seen it before. Even channel surfing became risky. I could no longer watch the History Channel or the nightly news, and the silliest of war movies made me cry. Against war movies. I see my husband shooting in platoon, and there he is again in MASH. How weird to hear him talk like Hawkeye Pierce. And soon I spot him everywhere, his body smeared with mud, his face bloodied. He's now the star of every ship blockade and battle scene, the Fighting 69th, A Bridge Too Far, Three Kings, Das Boot, and Stalag 17. In Stalingrad he's killed, and then he's killed in Midway, and a few good men. He's burned or gassed, he's shot between the eyes, or shoots himself when he comes home again. Each movie is a training exercise, a scenario for how my husband dies. When I think about my husband on deployment, I imagine him pared down to the essentials, his uniforms, perhaps a couple of military manuals, and a few personal possessions, nothing else. Everything from the civilian world is left behind. This next poem is called Non-Essential Equipment. The dog and I are first among those things that will not be deployed with him. Forget civilian clothes as well. He shouldn't bring too many photographs, which might get wet, the faces blurred. He only needs a set of uniforms. Even his wedding ring gives pause. What if it fell? He'd be upset to dent or scratch away the gold engraving. The sea bag must be light enough to sling across his shoulder, weigh almost nothing, each canvas pocket emptied of regret. The trick is packing less. No wife, no pet, no perfumed letters dabbed with I love yous, or anything he can't afford to lose.
Jeanne Dubreau, reading three poems from her new collection, Stateside. She teaches creative writing at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland. You can read the full text of the three poems we heard on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Today's show was produced by Roberta Schirach. Our engineers are Audrey Bentham and Bob Purdick. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Melody Kramer is our associate producer for online media. I'm Terry Gross.
And this is the time of year for commencement ceremonies that send college graduates out into the world looking for work. At a speech this month at Hampton University in Virginia, President Obama stated what most graduates already know.
This class is graduating at a time of great difficulty for America and for the world. You're entering a job market in an era of heightened international competition, with an economy that's still rebounding from the worst crisis since the Great Depression.
Now, the economy may be getting better, but it's still a rough time to try to launch a career. Today on Morning Edition's Business Report, we begin a series in which we'll meet college graduates from around the country. We begin with the very pragmatic accounting graduate. Reporter Emily McCord of member station WYSO has the story.
Meet Melanie Singer, a 22-year-old recent college graduate who majored in accounting. She grew up in a rural town in Ohio and then went to the University of Dayton, a private Catholic school. She got good grades, studied abroad, and according to her LinkedIn profile, her hobbies include hiking, sports, and fiscal responsibility.
Everything you read, accounting was in like the top five positions to get a job in.
She chose her major so that she'd be employable when she graduated. But while she was in school, the economy tanked.
After that, it kind of was like, don't just expect a job to come knock on the door.
Melanie's been working with a career counselor since her freshman year and did three internships while in school full time. She worked with a recruiter to help connect her with jobs and started sending out resumes at the beginning of her senior year.
I don't know how many websites or jobs I've sent my resume to. I used to keep a list of all the jobs I applied for and the ones I heard back from. But after, I think, a couple months, I was like, this is just, it's getting hard.
Melanie hoped she would have a job by now. and she fights back tears as she talks about rejection after rejection.
I don't know. You always want to put the blame on yourself. What did I do wrong? Did I say something in the interview that was wrong? Am I, you know, not qualified? Like, I don't know, you know, but what can I do better?
She tries to present herself professionally, dressing as someone you'd see around the office rather than someone on her summer off. Melanie seems well-suited to be an accountant. She's good at math and likes the idea that everything has an answer. But a job search isn't math. There isn't a formula that always results in a job. And that uncertainty is worrying Melanie, who has about $15,000 in student loan debt and is back living with her parents and her four siblings.
Coming from a small town, when you go to a prestigious school, you graduate with a great degree, and then you come back and you don't have anything, it doesn't look real good.
But things are looking up. Melanie recently interviewed at two jobs and is waiting to hear back. One is for a local freight company, the other at a business research group.
I guess crossing my fingers that one of these hopefully comes through. I really hope that within a month I'll have something.
The waiting is the most, to me, the most difficult part.
Sylvie Stewart is Melanie's career counselor at the University of Dayton.
Because that's where you're using a lot of your energy, hoping and praying and begging.
Stewart says when you're waiting for a job, your perception of time changes. What can be a couple of days to an employer seems like weeks or a lifetime to a job seeker. And Stewart says lines like, don't take it personally.
A job can be more personal. It's your livelihood.
Stewart encourages students like Melanie to stay motivated and think long term. This is just the beginning. So it's a week after her interviews for that freight company and business research group. I called Melanie to see if her new beginning is taking shape.
Hi.
Did you find out yet? Any word on the job?
I heard back, actually, from one. Told me that they had already hired a person for the position. And then I got an email on the other one saying that they had hired someone else.
Now Melanie's worried that she got so excited about those jobs that she fell behind on applying. But Melanie's trying not to be discouraged. In fact, she's contacting both of those employers to get feedback on what she could do better in the future. For NPR News, I'm Emily McCord in Yellow Springs, Ohio.
Tomorrow we continue this series that we're calling Setting Out. We'll meet Heather Lefebvre, who's an English major from Brandeis University.
I'm trying to get a job in publishing. Frankly, I'll take what I can get right now. I've also signed up for some temp agencies because right now I need money.